TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Stephen Zarlenga.
This is part two of a celebration of the work of an extraordinary man, Stephen Zarlenga, author of the book The Lost Science of Money and founder of the American Monetary Institute. Stephen Zarlenga died on April 25, 2017. I interviewed Zarlenga in May 2009 when the consequences of the financial crisis of 2007 and 8, with mortgage fraud and predatory lending, had become obvious and his reform ideas were in demand. Working with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Zarlenga helped develop legislative language for a major reform of the Federal Reserve System. And you'll hear an update from Kucinich in a moment. But here first is my introduction and the interview with Zarlenga that I recorded in a garden in Palo Alto, California, in 2009.
There appear to be two main responses to the current financial crisis. One is to improve the present system by oversight and regulation. The other approach is to look for the reasons for the collapse and come up with a radical reform of the ways in which money is created and used. You will now hear a proposal for such fundamental change. There have been attempts over time to abolish the Federal Reserve System, to scrutinize the power of banks to create money, and to find new ways of raising money for social projects, such as healthcare, education, and infrastructure repair or improvements. Here's a proposal to address all three aspects of the monetary system in one piece of legislation. Stephen Zarlenga, in his diligently researched book, set out to prove that money has served socially beneficial purposes throughout history only when created by governments as an instrument of law and not as the private preserve of the rich. He concludes that the monetary system in the U.S. is privatized to a degree unparalleled compared to other modern central banks, and that this private power over management and creation of money needs to be ended. Zarlenga also wrote in the introduction to the proposed legislation, quote, "The power to create money is an awesome power, at times stronger than the executive, legislative, and judicial powers combined. It's like having a magic checkbook where checks can't bounce. It determines the direction of our society by deciding where the money goes, what gets funded, and what does not. Will it be used for infrastructure and health and education? Or will it go into warfare and real estate loans, creating the real estate bubble, leading to a crash and depression? Under the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, our government has the sovereign power to issue money and spend it into circulation. That money-issuing power should never have been taken away from democratically elected government and placed into private hands as it is in the American Federal Reserve System today. Indeed, most people would be surprised to learn that the bulk of our money supply is not created by our government, but by private banks when they make loans." And that's the end of a quote from the summary of the proposed legislation that you can read or download from the American Monetary Institute website at monetary.org. I spoke with Stephen Zarlenga in May 2009. He had just returned from meeting with Dennis Kucinich and briefing members of Congress and their staffs. We met in a garden at a friend's house in Palo Alto, California, and had several birds, including two crows, join the conversation. We talked about the role of the Federal Reserve in the bailout of banks. You may remember Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont when he grilled Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke in February 2009 at a Senate Budget Committee hearing. He famously asked about the $2.2 trillion that the Fed had lent to banks. I asked Zalenga what might have happened if amounts in that range, including the $700 billion TARP bailout, had been used differently. You raised the interesting question, why was the bailout given to banks? It could have been given to us, to the people.
Well, sure. If we assume that it's $3 trillion, now some people are saying that, oh, it's six or seven. If we assume it was $3 trillion, because I've been asked this by a number of people of every level in society, they understand, you see. And I told the people in Congress when I was there 10 days ago, you know, people are asking me this question. You guys are like the emperor is naked here. They're asking, what if instead of handing that money over to the banks, assume $3 trillion, what if it was just given to the people? So we calculated it out. I mean, anybody can do this. We know the population of the country. We're using $3 trillion. It meant $6.9 billion for each congressional district. $6.9 billion. Now, what does that do? Well, $6.9 billion going into each congressional district basically guarantees re-election. So I wanted the Congress people to understand that possibility. Now, also, you could give it to everybody who's working. Give a check, divide the $3 trillion into everybody who's got a Social Security card. That means retired or still working but with a Social Security card. That came to $18,000 per person. Or, if you divided it up, the $3 trillion, among every man, woman, and child in the country, 304 million of them, it comes to $9,800 per person. What would happen? Just think of, would there be a recession if every man, woman, and child got $9,800? Would Toys R Us be in trouble or General Motors? No. People would be buying cars. People would be paying off their mortgages. The banks would be okay, except for those 19 or 20 banks that should not exist. They're the ones that made this mess. The regional banks are generally in pretty good shape. Our advice has always been, don't bail out these characters. They've given us a wonderful opportunity to take them out of business, divide up their activities and make them available to the properly functioning regional banks on extremely favorable terms, even to the point of gifts. It doesn't cost the people anything. But what's happened is, and this shows the power of politics, they've used their political power to grab these trillions of dollars and these bailouts. We can get it all back. And we should get it all back. And there should be prosecutions. Because the things that they've done to create this much of a mess were clearly illegal. All that should be done if we're going to have a country. And it's important that we have a country, I think. Again, ultimately because of the nature of these weapons that are out there.
That is an awesome power. The power to issue money and to allocate its use.
Yeah. Not the kind of thing you can take outside of our government, outside of our system of law, and privatize without disaster. And that's all we've had is disaster. And when people sometimes bring up the objection, well, how can we trust government to do this? That's because there's been a tremendous propaganda campaign against government, the idea that government can't do anything right. Now, admittedly, it's hard for government to do things right when the monetary power has been removed and privatized to start with. But a lot of that is propaganda. And finally, the question I ask in these talks, who would you rather control our money system? Government, that if you act like good citizens and organize your friends and can have an effect on government? Would you rather do it through government, or would you rather have Enron control the system? And people laugh, and they think, Enron, well, he's exaggerating. And I wasn't exaggerating, but it was a metaphor until a few weeks ago when I learned that, in fact, Enron was on the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And Enron had a seat on that board. Shame on you people. Beat it. Get out of the way. We know the system. The system creates money out of nothing, and it leaves it in the control of private elements. It's a fiat money system, and it's operated so badly that a lot of people, for example, the Ron Paul people, who are good people, they understand there's a problem. They want to change the system. They understand that. That's a big deal. But they have come to the conclusion that fiat money is the problem because this horrible system is issuing fiat money, and we see it's not working. But what I tell the Ron Paul people, and they get this immediately, the problem is not fiat money. As Aristotle told us, the nature of money, the very nature of it, is it's a fiat of the law. But the problem comes when you have the private creation of fiat money. Because then what that's like is a private tax that's levied against all of us and goes to the benefit of those with that accounting privilege in banking. That's the problem. That's what has to be addressed. We address that problem by putting the system within our government, within the Treasury, operating it to be neither inflationary or deflationary. These things can be done. Using that power to pay for the things that need to be done, the infrastructure that needs to be done. Social Security payments can be paid with that power. The national debt, as it comes due, not all at once, but over the decades that it comes due, most of it's due in about 5 years, that can be paid for with that power. All these things are doable. Now, you'll hear screams, oh, that's going to be inflationary. That'll be inflationary. Now, don't be worried by that kind of talk, especially from economists. It's not a science. Remember that, people. They are always screaming that anything that's done for the people will be inflationary. During the Great Depression, when Roosevelt was trying to rebuild the $100 billion that was lost in companies going under, banks going under, and so on, every time he tried to do something, and he was able to create about $15 billion, every time he tried to do something, the economists would scream, that would be inflationary. Now, they're in the middle of the world's greatest deflation, and they're worried about inflation. So it's a mantra for these guys. It's their line. And the reason that this need not be inflationary, if new money creates goods and services, the reason it's not inflationary is that you have the goods and services. And the existence of those things keeps pressure on prices. And infrastructure is one of those elements. We include in infrastructure healthcare and education. You know, you cannot build the hardware unless you have healthy, educated people to put it together. Infrastructure increases everybody's effectiveness, and that keeps pressure on prices. So the inflation argument, it's important that it be looked at in terms of when the system is being run, that it not be operated in an inflationary way. But don't accept it as, you can't do this, you can't do this. Yeah.
What would you say to those who say the war is really, World War II is really the one that ended the Depression of the 30s?
Well, it's true because they wouldn't let Roosevelt create enough money for the various programs that were good. And this shows to me the worst aspect of banker control, the really worst and unforgivable thing. And it's not all the banks that are responsible for this. It's those that are dominating, whoever they are. Whenever he tried to create money that would be good for the people, they screamed, oh, inflation, stop, stop. You know, oh, heavens no, you can't do that. When it came time in the war where he had to ask for money for ships that are going to be sunk, airplanes that are going to be shot out of the sky, bombs that are going to be blowing up people and houses and things. They didn't worry about the inflation. They said, how much do you want? To me, that is an unforgivable aspect of banking. And if we're to have justice in this society, that has to be addressed.
You were just in Washington. Tell us about your experience there.
We were in Washington and for 4 days, and I go there at least twice a year or more. Here's what the conclusion is of that visit. We need changes in leadership. We need a deeper respect for the people. It's up to us, it's up to you to put that pressure on your congresspeople. You'd be surprised how walking into your congressional office in your district and making a point of these things, you'd be shocked, I think, at how much of an effect that has. And you tell them directly, if you're not going to support this kind of stuff, I'm going to vote for anybody else. Tell them you want monetary reform or you want a new congressperson. Say it in a nice way, but make it clear that that's what's at stake. If you do that, and a few other people in that district do that, we'll get these changes, believe me. Don't buy the lie that you won't have any effect, that the people giving them money will dominate. People giving them money are a big factor in their re-elections, but they understand that votes are much more important than money. It takes a lot of money to swing a couple of votes. And you have that voting power, especially if you organize with your friends. And you'll be acting directly on your federal people. And more than that, do the same thing with your state people, with your state representative, with your state senators, with the, you can go all the way down to school board. Because all of those people are facing impossible problems in their financing of what's going on in the state. They can't create money at the local level. If they understand that this one tiny, it's really a small change, it's big in terms of political, making it happen politically. If your local representatives understand that a small change at the national level solves their local funding problems, including paying for all unfunded federal mandates, they can put more pressure on your congressman and on your senator than we ever could. So do that too. I want to close on a suggestion of action, people. Do this. We're Americans. We're not supposed to be pushed around like this by a bunch of paper pushers, basically. You know, they wouldn't last 2 minutes on your football field.
That was the conclusion of my 40-minute interview with Stephen Zalenger, author of an over 700-page history of monetary systems. The title is The Lost Science of Money. I interviewed him in a garden in Palo Alto, California, on May 2, 2009. This program is in his honor and to his memory. Stephen Zalenger died on April 25, 2017. In spite of Zalenger's passing, his ideas, the legislation developed from them, and the institution he built are vibrant and alive. In 2011, Dennis Kucinich and John Conyers introduced H.R. 2990, the NEED Act. That stands for National Emergency Employment Defense. Even though the proposed legislation was not acted upon, H.R. 2990 is available to be reintroduced by anyone in Congress at any time. The organization that Zalenger built, the American Monetary Institute, continues, and the annual conference of 2017 is going forward as planned. The website is monetary.org. At the 2016 AMI conference, former Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich gave a talk in Zalenger's honor. Kucinich also spoke in keen awareness of the deep structural problems in the U.S. that had become so glaringly obvious during the 2016 election season. And he made an appeal to all to move forward with monetary legislation developed by Zarlenga. Dennis Kucinich served as U.S. Representative of Ohio from 1997 to 2013. Kucinich has been a strong voice in the anti-war movement and was co-sponsor of H.R. 676, the Universal Single Payer Healthcare Act. He gave an eloquent summary for monetary reform. Dennis Kucinich.
I look today at a presidential election that is more like professional mud wrestling than it is about a serious discussion about the needs of our country. Tax cuts or tax increases? That's the only thing that Washington knows. Cut people's taxes, cut for some, which is part of the acceleration of the wealth upwards, or increase taxes, and that's part of the acceleration of the wealth upwards because the people at the top aren't paying a fair share. America's at the threshold of a moment when we have to move the country in a direction of a profoundly different discussion about the nature of nationhood and the power of the government, the people's government, to reset the public agenda. When our Constitution was first written, the founders put the mechanism in there. Under Article 1, Section 8, Congress had the power to coin or create money, period. We all know about the Federal Reserve Act. We all know how the public has not really understood that the Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express. Today, the money system is run for the few at the expense of the many. Now, we all know that in this room. We can organize people around this now. We can organize people along the thinking of creating plenty, of creating jobs for the many, of rebuilding America, of healthcare for all, and education for all, and jobs for all. There shouldn't be people sleeping in the streets of America, losing their homes. We are really in a country right now that has the key to the deliverance of our democracy. And it goes back to the work of you, Stephen. And so it's up to us who are still involved in making public policy, either from the inside or the outside, to be as apostles spreading this word, because sooner or later it is going to catch on, because necessity being the mother of invention, we cannot keep going into this spiral of decline where we're told that we have to keep cutting public resources and assets, keep privatizing everything that belongs to the public, and chopping it up and cartelizing it and sending it off to in multinational corporations. We can't go that route. And so when people are waiting for alternatives, we can say we have the alternative. You can sit almost on the back of an envelope and say, you know, I'll figure out a way to write off $1 trillion in student debt. I mean, that tells you this is not imaginary. The mechanisms are there. Paradoxically, the Federal Reserve gave us a lesson with the quantitative easing that was used during the subprime meltdown, creating money out of nothing and giving it to who? Other banks. Not only in America, but internationally. Now, when you can explain to people they did that, it's one of those guess what moments. We can do the same thing. And we don't have to give the money to banks. We can put the money into circulation and spend it specifically for the needs of the people. When you start to communicate that to people, there's real power in that. And we need to take it into the black churches. We need to take it in the labor halls. We need to take it across this country. This is the time to do it. We're at the threshold of a really powerful shift in public consciousness. It's like a wave that's coming. And it'll wash over the 2016, and regardless of who gets elected in 16, there'll be a one-termer, because the changes that are coming are so powerful that there's this great opening that's occurred. And it's an opening and awareness in title changes in politics, in an awareness and opening in public consciousness about the need for dramatic change. So we don't have to have poverty anymore. We don't have to have war anymore. We don't have to have sickness anymore. That we actually have the ability to create a new world. We create it with our hands. We create it with our heart. We create it with a knowledge of history. We create it with the work of people like Stephen Zarlenga. We create it with the intention of the American Monetary Institute to provide the information to policymakers so that we can go forward and show how you do it. Here's how you get the money to rebuild the infrastructure. Here's how you get the money to put millions of people to work. Here's how you get the money to provide for housing for people. Here's where the money comes from so you can fund the medical needs of the country. Here's how you can assure people will have retirement security. Here's how you can make sure that every young person who wants to go to college can do so tuition free. Here's the mechanisms. We don't have to live in poverty anymore. We don't have to live with war anymore. We can create that new world, and that's what this moment is about. 20 great years. Thank you, Stephen Zarlenga. Thank you, Lucien, for your work in supporting this effort. Let's hear it for Stephen Zarlenga and the American Monetary Institute.
That was former Congressman from Ohio, Dennis Kucinich. He spoke in September 2016 at the annual conference of the American Monetary Institute in Chicago. All his references to Stephen went to Stephen Zarlenga, author of The Lost Science of Money and founder of the American Monetary Institute. Zarlenga died 7 months later on April 25, 2017. But his work is being continued by his co-workers in the American Monetary Institute and, of course, by Dennis Kucinich. Go to their website at monetary.org for links to presentations at former conferences and text summaries of the legislation.
You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD or a film on DVD of the American Monetary Act by calling 1-707-463-2654. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD or DVD order keeps this program on the air. You can get your CD or DVD by mail or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glurden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.